Good morning, everyone. Good morning. In general, before a Kol Yom Rishon program, I thank Rabbi Seif for his involvement in the coordination. Today in particular, there was an enormous amount of coordination. And usually you say, Kishem Shenichnas Labris, Kain Yikonis Latara L'chup L'masim Tovim. I think today we're going to say, Kishem Shenichnas Latara, Kain Yikonis Labris L'chup L'masim Tovim. Since the Torah is coming before the Bris, it's a pleasure to once again introduce Rabbi Tzvi Sabalovsky to our shul. He's a well-known mechaber of Svarim. He has over 2,000 of his shiurim are posted just on YU Torah's website. And if you can't sleep at night and you're looking for a good shiur, I encourage you to look up the shiurim. And if you're awake during the day, then I certainly encourage you to do so. He is beloved as a rav of a shul and is an exceptionally popular Rosh Hashiva and Magid Shir in Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Chanan. He also made some adaptation, and the initial title has been changed, but very appropriately for the simcha that we're celebrating in our shul today, he's going to be speaking about individual and communal responsibility in the mitzvah of Bris Milah. The program here will end at about 5 to 10. Normally there's a breakfast in conjunction with this program, but there'll be a much more deluxe breakfast than usual. We thank the Seif family for sponsoring the Kol Yom Rishon and for informing everybody of the Bris Milah and the sumptuous Suda that will follow. Following the program, everyone is invited to come downstairs to the main shul where the Bris Milah will take place at 10 o'clock punkluch. Without further ado, it's a pleasure to call upon Rabbi Sabalovsky. There are Mar Makoma sheets going around, I think.
Thank you, Rabbi Shmidman, Rishis Harav. As I was rushing to take off my tefillin, so they told me that the mole said he's starting exactly at 10 o'clock. So I said that, okay, I know the mole already, Baruch Hashem, we go back quite a few, a couple of brisim he did in my own children, so I know the answer is correct. He does start at 10 o'clock, so we told you the shiur will be over at 9:55. That's the deal, we hope. So let's begin a sugya of Bris Milah. And even though at first glance, the sugya of Bris Milah, the mitzvah of Bris Milah, it's fairly simple in terms of, I mean, maybe simple from a halachic point of view, but it's a little bit more complicated technical point of view. But I want to focus really on the obligation of Bris Milah. Who precisely is obligated in Bris Milah? And the answer to that question really is multiple levels, that there are really three distinct obligations within the mitzvah of Bris Milah, perhaps even four, as we'll see as the shiur develops. But let's focus on the very basic, the ABCs of the obligation, whose obligation, who is required to make sure the child receives the bris. So let's start with the first of the Mar Makomos, the Sugya Maseches Kedushin and Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph. The Gemara comments, Lemolo, the Gemara is commenting on the general obligations of a father towards a child, included in the sugya, the obligations of teaching Torah, the obligations of teaching a trade, the obligations, according to some, even of teaching a child how to swim for safety reasons. So in the list of obligations that a father has towards a son, is the obligation of Bris Milah. Asks the Gemara Minolan, how do we know that this is first and foremost the father's requirement? Tichsiv, Vayomal Abraham es Yitzchak Beno. The Pasuk in Chumash, in next week's Parsha, not this week's Parsha, though the truth is that if you had to pick a week to speak about Parsha, about the mitzvah of Bris Milah, Lech Lecha was a pretty good choice. My original topic was supposed to be Bishul Acham, in case anyone was interested, so maybe next year we'll put that on the list. So says the Gemara, it's based on the Psukim that appear in Parshas Vayera, that Avram Avinu performs the Bris Milah on Yitzchak. He asks the Gemara, V'heichad l'mali avua, m'chayve beidina l'memalei. Well, from where do we know that if the father does not perform his obligation, either perhaps there is no father, or the father is not interested in fulfilling his obligation. How do we know that now the requirement of Bris Milah becomes incumbent upon the Beis Din? And when we use the term Beis Din, although the term Beis Din technically means the court, the Jewish court of law, here it refers really to all of Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish community, whoever has the possibility and the means to see to it that the Bris Milah is performed. How do we know that everybody in effect becomes obligated? In this week's parasha, the Torah speaks about the mitzvah of Bris Milah, the Lashon Rabbim in the plural, that everybody has to make sure that all those who do not have a bris, in fact, receive them. The Heichad L'Malei Beis Din, what if even that fails? That the Jewish community doesn't fulfill its obligation. The father, again, is not present. Mechayev Iyul L'Mimel Nafshe. How do we know that eventually this child, when he turns bar mitzvah, is obligated to perform a bris on himself? Tichsiv Arol Zocha Shal Yimos Besar Losov V'Nichrisa. The basic final obligation, in a sense, rests upon the individual himself. If the bris is not taken care of by the father, not taken care of by the Beis Din, then and only then the child, upon reaching bar mitzvah, becomes obligated in this mitzvah. Then, kind of as an afterthought to the sugya, the Gemara tells us, how do we know that the first primary obligation which rests upon the father does not rest upon the mother? The psukim in Pashas Vayera, once again, that speak about Avraham Avinu taking care of the bris, in contrast to Sarah Imenu. And hopefully come back to that if we have some time at the end, how to understand that distinction in halacha between the father's obligation in contrast to the mother's. So basically what we have from our sugya is three levels of obligation. First and foremost, the father, absence of the father, the Beis Din, i.e. the Jewish community, absence of the Jewish community fulfilling its role, then the individual himself. One could raise a very basic fundamental question about how to understand this obligation that a father has towards his son. We call it a yeshiva shechakira. The question, how to understand the nature, the very essence of this obligation. Do we say that basically the mitzvah of bris milah is on the person himself? Person is an aura, person doesn't have a bris, they have to take care of the mitzvah of bris milah. It's a chavas aguf on the person himself. Eloha. The Torah wanted that the bris milah should take place at the age of, ripe old age of 8 days old. How in the world are you going to say to an 8-day old baby, make sure you get yourself a bris? Comes the Torah and says, the father, who is responsible for the child in so many different ways, physically and spiritually, one of the obligations that the father has is to make sure that the child's needs are taken care of. One of the child's needs being a bris milah. But the father is more of, we may even call a shaliach, he's more of an agent, so to speak, of the son, or perhaps like a guardian, an apotropos of the son. But it's really the son's obligation. It's really each and every individual's requirement to make sure that they have a bris milah. The Torah appoints the father as the representative for the young child. Or maybe one could argue, no, the father is not acting as a representative of the child. It's a father's obligation. It's a mitzvah. Hamutelos al av, no different than I have a mitzvah of shaking a lulav on Sukkot. I have a mitzvah of hearing shofar Rosh Hashanah. I have a mitzvah of putting on tefillin in the morning. And if I have a son, I have an obligation to do a bris milah on that son. I am not being motzi, quote unquote, the son. It is my personal obligation. So what's the nature of the obligation of a father to a son? Is it primarily the son's obligation with the father acting as a representative? Or is it really the father's individual obligation? So some may be wondering, my nafkamina, what's the difference? Very, you know, esoteric, philosophical, hakira. The bottom line is, you have to make a bris. Bottom line is, whether you like it or not, they're going to charge you for the bagels and lox. I don't know what they serve here. I guess, I assume it's probably the same, pretty close to the menu. So, the mice of the father has to take care of it. So why do we care whether it's the father representing the son, whether it's the father as his own personal obligation? I'll tell you nafkamina, tell you a practical difference. What if the son turns bar mitzvah ready, and for whatever reason, the bris milah was not taken care of? What role, if any, does the father have at that point? If you hold, like the first side, that the father is representing the son, the father is doing on behalf of the son what the son cannot do, one could argue, logically, that's true until the child becomes bar mitzvah. Once the child is over bar mitzvah, then he can do it himself. What do I need the father for? The father's out of the picture. If you hold that the entire obligation as a father is as the shaliach, as the guardian, as the one who's in charge, responsible for the son, that responsibility may very well fall by the wayside after the age of bar mitzvah, and the father's out of the picture. However, if you understand that the mitzvah of the father is an individual mitzvah, it's his own personal mitzvah, he's still the father, The child is 75 years old. He's still the father. He still has an obligation to perform the mitzvah of bris milah. So it's unclear precisely what the halacha is. Do we have any proofs, any raya's? So very often we know in halacha, you can bring a raya, you can bring a proof from an area of halacha that's not quite localized where you're looking. Sometimes the greatest raya's in halacha's bris milah may be found in another area of halacha. And we have an example of this in the second of the Maror Mekomos. Some are probably wondering why in the world I put a Rambam and Hilchos Korban Pesach on the Maror Mekomos. Well, you'll see why in a moment. The halacha tells us that a person is not permitted to eat a Korban Pesach if either he himself is an Orel, he has not received the Bris Milah, or if he has a son who has not received the Bris Milah, or if he owns an Evet Knaani, owns a type of a servant with non-Jews in the process of becoming Jewish in that middle stage called Evet Knaani. An Evet Knaani is required to have a Bris Milah, as it says explicitly in Parshas Lech Lecha. If either I myself are an Orel, my son is an Orel, my Evet Knaani is an Orel, I am not permitted to eat Korban Pesach. So let's take a quick look at how the Rambam formulates that halacha in the second of the Maror Mekomos. Kishem shemilas atzmo me'akvasa milasos pesach. Just as a person's own being an orel prevents him from eating korban pesach, kach milas banav haktanim, so to his young children, katan meaning under the age of bar mitzvah, umilas kol avodav, or any evet Knaani who he owns, bein gedolim bein ktanim me'akvas asahu, prevents him from eating korban pesach. The wording of the Rambam is obvious. The Rambam is drawing a contrast between Banav HaKtanim, his young children, in contrast to Avodav Bein Gedol and Bein Ketanim. The implication of the Rambam seems to be that whereas in Evet Knaani, I am obligated to be Mal, no matter how old he is, the child, my son, the obligation falls by the wayside once he is no longer a Katan, and therefore I would be permitted to eat Korban Pesach if my over the age of bar mitzvah boy is not yet mahul, doesn't have a bris milah. That wouldn't concern us because it's basically not my problem anymore. So the simple reading of the Rambam is pointing us in a certain direction. I say the simple reading of the Rambam. There are other ways to read this Rambam. There are other approaches depending on the relationship between Hilchos Korban Pesach and Hilchos Bris Milah beyond the scope right now. Suffice it to say, it would appear from the Rambam that that is the halacha, that once the child turns bar mitzvah, then the father's obligation no longer applies. But again, far from conclusive la halacha. When we speak about the father's obligation, either as a personal obligation or as a representative obligation, we have to ask ourselves a very practical question. I'll have to pose it to the Baal Simcha today. That we know a father is obligated to do a bris milah. I just heard that you brought a mole in from Washington Heights. Why aren't you doing the meal itself? As it says in the Chumash, Vayomel Avraham, it's itself. No, he didn't call in a mole from somewhere else. Avraham Avinu did it himself. The primary obligation rests upon the father. How do we understand the practice that a father can, in effect, hire a mole, ask a mole to do it on his behalf? So there is a machlokes harishonim, how to understand that halacha, that a father asks a mole to do it on his behalf. It's in the third of the Maror Mekomos, but I have to be honest that it's within those three dots that are cut off in the Maror Mekomos. So you have to trust a little amuna somebody on this one. But if anyone gets a chance later, you can take a look at the Darkei Moshe on the bottom of the Torah, you'll see it. The Darkei Moshe, written by the Ramah, quotes in Or Zeruah, when the Or Zeruah makes the following statement. Says the Or Zeruah, a father has an obligation to do the mitzvah of bris milah. No matter what the lumdus is all about, the father must do it himself. And says the Or Zeruah, if the father does not do it himself, he does not fulfill the mitzvah of bris milah. And therefore, says the Or Zeruah, if the father knows how to do it, he himself is a mohel, he knows how to do the procedure, then he must do it himself. If he doesn't know how to do it, what do you want from the poor child? So what are you going to do? You have to get somebody else to do it. But don't think the father fulfilled the mitzvah, says the Or Zeruah. If you hand the mitzvah over to somebody else, you do not fulfill the mitzvah whatsoever. The Ramah quotes this Or Zeruah, and he says, it's a tzarch iyun under Or Zeruah. I don't understand it. How could the Or Zeruah say, I'm not yotzei the mitzvah by handing it off to somebody else? Why is this different from any other area of halacha that's called shlichus? Shlucho shel adam kemoso. I can appoint a shaliach to perform a mitzvah on my behalf. I can appoint a shaliach, for argument's sake, to separate trumos and maestros. A person technically can appoint a shaliach to perform kiddushin on his behalf. I'm not advocating in it. I'm not suggesting it. But the reality is, the Mishnah says, at first, ketechli mekadish anisha adei shaliach, asks the Ramah, why can't you do a bris mila adei shaliach? And the Ramah, in fact, disagrees with the Arzaruah. There is a lot of discussion in the later Acharonim what prompted the Arzaruah to his conclusion. We usually assume the following. If the father really knows how to do the bris mila himself, he really should do it for a variety of reasons. First of all, we want to be concerned with the view of the Arzaruah, that if the father hands it off to somebody else, he's really losing the mitzvah itself. The Arzaruah's view was that there is no shlichus, you cannot apply the principle of an agency or of a representative. So if the father physically knows how to do it, the father absolutely should do it himself. And for an additional reason, we have a general rule that's called mitzvah bo yosem yibishlucho. Any time that a mitzvah can be done by myself, why should I hand it off to somebody else? Well, it's not appropriate. It's not a proper respect for the mitzvah. The demonstration of my love and care for mitzvahs is to do the mitzvahs myself. Why hand it off if I don't have to? Therefore, if the father knows how to do it, he should absolutely be encouraged to perform the bris mila himself. However, if the father doesn't know how to do the bris mila, or he's not sure that he knows how to do the bris mila, so then we would strongly encourage the other way, namely, find yourself a professional mohel who is willing to do it. There are some mohelim who are willing to do as follows. I can't speak for any particular mohel in town or anyone who's doing the mila today. There are some mohelim who are willing to do the following. You know, those who come and say, listen, I'm an Arzaruah man, I got to do this bris mila myself. So there are some mohelim who will set up the entire mila for the father, and basically, the mohel is doing the whole procedure, but the actual cut itself, the removing of the orla, there are some mohelim who will permit the father to do it. I didn't say the mohel doesn't take his salary for that. I didn't say that. But there are some mohelim and some fathers who do that. I cannot say that I followed that practice. I will say, even if I would have had a havami to follow in that practice, I probably would have been outvoted by my wife. So the bottom line is that I did it the way everyone else has been doing it. I can't say since the days of Avraham Avinu, it's not a fair statement, because Avraham Avinu did do it on his own son. But for all us fathers who are not quite trained yet to be mohelim, so I followed traditional practice, I stood by the side and watched, and appointed him as a shaliach. It's interesting, the poskim have a discussion whether the mohel is actually a shaliach or not. Is it a formal shaliach? Not a formal shaliach, the shalichus really work. I remember at the bris of my oldest son, I was actually with Rabbi Katzenstein, the one who was about to do the mila today. So I was standing next to Rabbi Katzenstein as he was getting the baby all ready. So I said to him, right as he was about to start, I said, Rabbi Katzenstein, I'm appointing you as a shaliach. So he turns around to me like I was crazy. He said to me, first of all, you don't think I know that I'm a shaliach? And second of all, it's on the card, you're about to say that in 3 seconds. If you just follow along what your next line is, you jump the gun. Of course you're supposed to say you're appointing you as a shaliach. So don't do anything rash, just follow instructions. Those are a good rule in life. When we speak about the father's obligation in bris mila, we may have to analyze a certain dimension that we find concerning bris mila, something very strange, not so much about the bris itself, but about the brachas that are recited concerning a bris. If we take a look at the fourth of the Marmakamos, the Masech HaShabbos, and the Daf Kuflam and Gimel Mebeis, Tana Rabbanan, Hamal Omer Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvosu Mitzvara Al Hamila, the Mol himself recites the bracha Al Hamila, like any other mitzvah, and the father recites the bracha of l'hachniso mevisa shlav mavinu, literally meaning thanking Hashem for giving us the opportunity to bring this child into the bris, into the covenant of Av Mavinu. And there is a very big problem that all the Rishonim deal with, is what is the significance of the second bracha? Why is there a second bracha of l'hachniso mevisa shlav mavinu? What was wrong with the first bracha? When you shake a lulav, you make one bracha. On a tilas lulav, you sit in the sukkah, you make one bracha. Leishir besukkah. So you made a bracha. Shir kiddushan mitzvot alamila. What is the point? What is the significance of the second bracha? Not only is this a theoretical question, but this is a very practical question in terms of when precisely the second bracha is supposed to be recited. Depending on how one understands the nature of this bracha of lachniso, is going to determine when it's recited. There are, in fact, different traditions in the Rishonim, whether the bracha lachniso is recited before the bris, whether it's recited after the bris. We have a custom that exists already since the days of the Rosh. The Rosh's view was that the bracha of lachniso is supposed to be recited right smack in the middle of the bris. There are, in fact, really two different parts, two physical actions that are done in a bris mila. There's what's called the mila itself, the removing of the outer skin. Then there's the priya, the revealing of the lower skin, the pulling back of the lower membrane. So the Rosh writes that the bracha of Achnisa should be said right smack in the middle, right between the what's called the Asaras HaOrla and the Priya. That's when the Achnisa should be recited. The problem is that the way most Molim today do Bris Milas, there is no in between. It's really all done in one shot. So therefore our custom has been that the Mol recites the bracha ala Mila, and literally as he's starting, so the father immediately jumps in and says, L'Achnisa Bevis Shel HaMavino. So I was at a bris, was back quite a few years, with a mole following. He was supposed to do, and the father followed the instructions. Everyone was following the perfect instructions, so the mole screamed out, Al-Hamila, he started to cut. The father screams out, La-Hachniso, Barisham Avinu. The problem was, there was the third guy there who was supposed to make the bracha Shekidesh, that's the third bracha afterwards with a cup of wine and the name of the baby. So he thought that he was also supposed to follow right away. Little did he know that he was about 10 minutes too early for his bracha. So I was standing there on the side, and you hear the Al-Hamila, then you say La-Hachniso. Then the third guy screams out, Bore Priyagofen, Al-Hachniso. Shekidesh. Everyone's looking like he's crazy. So one guy does. It's 5 yards. The guy was off sides. The guy jumped off. It was not a football town yet. The guy's okay. Illegal motion in the backfield. Yeah, they still call it that. Okay, good. Good. Okay. Good.
They understand
the motion. Okay. I was once trying to say the Shia, and doing that, I realized I was saying the Shia was on tape, was on Vayu Torah, and then there were 1,000 people sitting and watching the Shia and not knowing what I'm doing with my hands. So I had to try to explain what was going on. Okay. So back to the story. So the question is, what is this bracha all about? Where does this bracha come from, Lachnisa? What's the purpose of it? We just made a bracha, ala Mila, 2 seconds earlier. So the Rambam, in the fifth of the Mar Mekamos, the Rambam writes, we'll pick it up from the third line of the Rambam. Mitzvah ala av, it's the middle of the, right after the third, fourth word on the third line. Mitzvah ala av lamulas bino, yes, al mitzvah shemetzuvin yisrael shemulu kala osha b'nei. It says the Rambam, there's a greater obligation for a father to see to it that the child receives a bris rather than somebody else's child. The Rambam is not negating the obligation to make sure that everybody receives a bris, but the primary obligation rests upon the father. Lefikach says the Rambam, im ein sham aviv, ein mevarchen achar ha-bracha zu. Therefore, if the father is not around, there is no bracha of lahachniso. So the Rambam is clear that the bracha of lahachniso is not a bracha on the mitzvah bris milah. It's not like lishma kol shofar. It's not like leisha besukah. It's not on the actual mitzvah bris milah. It's on the secondary obligation. It's on the chovas ha'avr bris milah. Because the father has a unique obligation in bris milah, that unique obligation carries with it a separate, an additional bracha, and that's the role of the bracha of lahachniso v'risa shel av mevino. Therefore, the Rambam says, if the father is not around and somebody else is doing it, so then lahachniso was not really being fulfilled, and therefore lahachniso should not be recited. The Rambam quotes an alternate minhag v'yesh b'shahora sheyavarchos ha-beis din o'echa min ha'am. There are some who argue that anybody else, either a representative of the beis din or anybody else, could recite the bracha. The ein roi lasis kein, says the Rambam, that it's not appropriate to do that. The Rambam thinks that would really be a bracha levatola. Continuing on the Rambam, Kosev Arayvid Zal, the Arayvid disagrees and says, Mestavra kemandiyama beizin am yuchat shiram mevarech. Says the Arayvid, the other opinion that the Rambam disagrees with seems to be more correct. The Nogu etzlenu shasandokus mevarech. The sanduk recites the bracha, which is in fact our custom as well, and at least in the Ashkenazi communities. That is the custom, that if the father is not present, or Rachmanu Litzlan, the father is not alive, so then the bracha is still recited, and is generally speaking recited by the sanduk. So at least according to the Rambam, we see that the role of the bracha lahachniso was very much linked to the father's obligation. According to those who disagree with the Rambam, according to the common practice today, that somebody else can potentially recite the bracha lahachniso as well, so we're really back to the original question, so why are we making this bracha? According to the Rambam, that the bracha is highlighting the father's obligation, then the bracha is understandable. But those who disagree with the Rambam, what's the purpose, what's the point of this bracha in the first place? So perhaps the role of the bracha of lahachniso is really a very, very different purpose altogether, and it's based on the sixth of the Mar Mekamos, a Tosfos that appears in Maseches Psochim and Daf Zayin. Tosfos is going back to the machlokas that we referred to before, whether the bracha of lahachniso is recited before the bris milah, or whether the bracha is recited after the bris milah. So if you take a look in the middle of the Tosfos, it's the fourth line, the first one line is lahachniso. Says Tosfos, the lo al zos ha'nasa achsha mevarech. The bracha lahachniso is not relating to this bris milah itself. אלא משבח ומודה להקדוש ברוך הוא שציוונו על המילה כשטוב על ידו. It is what we call in halacha, not so much a birchas ha-mitzvah. It's not relating to the action that you're doing right now, but it's rather a birchas ha-shevach. It's a praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the wonderful institution called Bris Milah. Now the question is, that's beautiful, but we have a lot of beautiful mitzvahs. Yeshiva Basukah is also a wonderful institution, yet we don't recite a birchas ha-shevach upon doing it. Tekiah Shofar is also an important mitzvah, yet we don't recite a bracha of shevach, a praising Hashem for it. So why do we go out of our way when it comes to Bris Milah to recite the bracha, an additional bracha of shevach? So says Rabbi Tessos in the name of Rabbi Natam, continues on, V'tiknu akan legalosu lodia shezu amila nasa l'shem yotzreinu. To make it clear to everybody that the mitzvah of Bris Milah, we are doing it for one reason alone, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded us, Achnisa Bavisa Shalom Avinu. Why would anybody think that there's any other agenda for doing a Bris Milah? So Tosis alludes to other Gemaras and Masechas of Avodah Zarah, the Lo L'Shem Avodah Gilulim. Nobody should think we're doing it for other religious purposes, for other religions. The Lo L'Shem Morna, Morna is a Suyu also in Avodah Zarah. Maybe a person has some kind of a medical need that he's doing a circumcision for. The Lo L'Shem Hagrizim, yet Tosis throws in a little bit of a shtach to the Kusim, that group in Klal Yisrael that was not really part of Klal Yisrael. They had a different system of beliefs, and they were doing it for, they believed in the sanctity of Hagrizim. So says Tosfos, we want to make it clear as day that we're performing the mitzvah of Bris Milah because it's a mitzvah lachnis of Bisa Shalom Avinu, because one could have thought otherwise, therefore we recite this bracha. Now the mitzvah of Yeshiva Basukha, no one's going to suspect we're doing Yeshiva Basukha for medical reasons, but you know, Bris Milah, proof positive, we know many people, non-Jewish people, many people get circumcised medically, so we want to make it clear, this is a mitzvah, this is not a circumcision, and that's the purpose of the additional bracha, lachniso, according to the view of Rabbeinu Tam. So again, so we have different opinions in the Rishonim, why this bracha exists in the first place. The Rambam links this bracha specifically to the obligation of the father, therefore in the absence of the father, the bracha would not even be recited, according to the Rambam, and those who disagree with the Rambam may follow the view of Rabbeinu Tam, perhaps other reasons that we'll have a chance to speak about as we continue on. So up until now, we've been focusing primarily on the obligation of the father. We've spoke about the obligation of the father in contrast to the obligation of the Beis Din. It's a more primary obligation than the obligation of the Beis Din. We've touched a little bit on the obligation of the child himself, but we said that that obligation really doesn't begin to even kick in until the age of Bar Mitzvah. But there was another player here who we have to discuss, and that's what we began to share. So we pointed out that yes, Avraham Avinu was obligated in Bris Milah, in contrast to Sarai Imenu, who was not obligated in Bris Milah. And this becomes the model for all generations. This is first and foremost the father's obligation, not the mother's obligation. How do we know that this is the case? How do we know that a mother is basically not obligated in the sense of a father to make sure that the child has a bris? So this is derived from a pasuk. The Gemara said it's based on a gzeiras hakosov, kasher tziva oso elokim, Avram was commanded, oso is a drasha, oso velo osa. That she, Sarah, was not commanded. This sets up the model for us for Bizman Hazeh as well. So comes Tosfos on the 7th of the Ramakamos, and he asks a very famous question. Those may remember from learning Masechet Kedushin, Daf Chavtes, this is probably the most famous question in the whole of the sugyas of Daf Chavtes, or the Rishon Rabbah with this kasha. Oso v'lo osa, the Gemara makes it sound like we need a special pasuk, a gezeiras hakosuf, to teach us that women are exempt from performing the mitzvah Bris Milah on their sons. V'yam Tomer asks Tosfos, lama likra, what do we need a pasuk for? Typically, the mitzvah saseh shesman gromo shenimo l'shpinu l'leidasa v'nosha p'turos. Says Tosfos, why should this be different than other mitzvahs saseh shesman gromo? Women up p'turos from other time-bound mitzvahs, tefillin, tzitzis, kriyishma, etc. Other mitzvahs that are linked to a specific time, either on the clock or on the calendar, generally speaking, women are exempt from. There are exceptions. There are many exceptions. There are probably more exceptions than the rule itself. Altogether, all the mitzvahs saseh shesman gromo are less than 10. But there are, but l'chaura, the mitzvah of Bris Milah should have been one of them. A Bris Milah can only be performed in the daytime. One cannot do a Bris Milah at night. And therefore, women should have been exempt just based on the regular rule of mitzvah seishas magrama. Why do we need a pasuk to go the extra level to exempt women? So Tosfos tries to determine, is it really called as magrama? Is it not called the Zman Grama? Finally, Tosas concludes, if you take a look at the last line of that Tosas in the seventh of the Ramah, Kamas Vyei Shlomar, the Asya Kamad Yama Hassam, the Mila Shlob Zman and Heges Bambi Yom Vem Balayla. There happens to be one Tana tucked away in Masechas Yavamas enough Ayin days, who is of the opinion that a Bris Mila can be done at night. That not on the eighth day itself, but after the eighth day, if a Bris had to be delayed anyway, then he could do it at night as well. We happen not to pass it that way, but there is such an opinion. So says Tosus, according to that opinion, it's not really Zman Grama. You can do it by Yom Valayla. So that's why the Gemara had to search and find a special pasuk that even according to that opinion, women of Turus. But according to Tosus, it's quite clear. We who paskin la locha that a bris milah can never be done at night. Then it's a plain and simple mitzvah say Shazman Grama. Women of Turus, because it's no different than any other mitzvah say Shazman Grama. That's what comes out according to the view of Tosus. However, Tosus in the eighth of the Marmar Kamos, in Maseches Megillah, he asks the exact same question, and Tosus gives a different answer. If you take a look, the Yesh Lomar, it's the third line into the Tosus, the Yesh Lomar, the Ilav Oso, if not for the special gezeres that cost it to exempt women, have Amina, the Haid, and Noshim, Pturus, and Mitzah Seisha, as Mangrama, when do we say that women are exempt from Mitzah Seisha, as Mangrama, Hanuhecha, the Lake of Kores? Says Tosfos, those are low-level mitzvahs. Tekiya Shofar, Sukkah, Lulav, Kriyashma, Tefillin, Tzitzis, I pretty much listed off all the mitzvahs as Mangrama. None of them carry with them the punishment of Kares. In contrast to Bris Milah, the stakes are much more serious, much heavier issues involved in Bris Milah is Ashayla, Chasholma, Venissa, Kares. So I would have thought that women would be Chayavos. Based on the regular rules of mitzvah seishas mangrama, women should have been chayavos in the mitzvah bris milah. A gezeres akosav osovala osa. So some of you may be wondering, why am I spending time on the lumdus and the kashas, taisu, we have a few minutes left, on the lumdus of havamina, where the women should have been chayavos, would have been chayavos, could have been chayavos. The bottom line is the pturos. The bottom line is, halach is quite clear that a woman is ptura from the mitzvah. Why is it important whether the ptur, whether the exemption is based on zman grama, or whether the exemption is based on a special gzeres hakosav? The reason why it's important is as follows. We started off the shiur by saying there are different levels of obligation in bris milah. There's the father's obligation, there's Klal Yisrael's obligation, and then there's the individual's obligation. When we say that a woman is ptura from bris milah, what do we mean by that? Obviously, individual, a woman obviously doesn't receive her own bris milah. When we speak about a woman being ptura from bris milah, what level of obligation are we talking about? Are we talking about being ptura from the chiyuv of the av? The father's chiyuv to be mal a son, a mother doesn't have. But maybe a mother is obligated by Torah's Beis Din. Why is she less a member of the Jewish community than anybody else? Maybe she doesn't have the specific obligation to be mal, her own child, but her child is no different than anybody else's child. She still is obligated by Torah's Beis Din, by Torah's Klal Yisrael. So that should depend on these 2 days in Tosfos. If you hold that Bris Milah is a mitzvah sasesha, as mine grow, my end of discussion, so women of Turo is finished. They're totally, completely exempt from the mitzvah. A woman has no obligation in the mitzvah of bris milah. But if you say the second approach, that milah is not a zman grama because it carries with it kares. It's an exception to the rule. The only reason why a woman is ptura because of a special pasuk of sovala osa, but that pasuk is talking about Avram and Sarah. That's talking about a parent's obligation. One could argue a woman is exempt as a parent, but she's still obligated as Beis Din. What's the difference? Big difference. Does she have primary obligation? If it's my son, I'm the one who's responsible. I can't shift it to anybody else. I have to make sure that it gets taken care of. If I'm obligated by Torah's Beis Din, I can do it. Somebody else can do it. Somebody else can do it. As a community, we have an obligation to do it. So this is a very real shaila. Bottom line, what is a woman's obligation, a woman's role? If it comes to a woman's attention that there is a child who is an RL, and she has the ability to do something about it, she can take care of this bris milah. She can make sure this child receives a bris milah. Is she obligated to do so or not? So according to one day in Tosfos, no. Mitzvah says she's my grandma, it's not my issue. And according to the other opinion in Tosfos, you better believe she's obligated. She has an obligation, like any other member of the Jewish community, to do whatever is within her power to make sure this child receives a bris milah. This is not just a theoretical shayla. The shayla happened halach l'maisa. I received the shayla. A woman asked me the following question. It came to her attention as part of her professional practice that she was in. It was a Jewish child who had come from a Russian family, a boy who did not have a bris milah. And the woman came to ask me that she found herself in a little bit of a quandary, because professionally, obviously, it's a little bit of stepping over the bounds in terms of trying to see what she could do about that. On the other hand, she felt religiously, she felt that here, as a Jewish child, perhaps she could intercede, perhaps she had the ear of the parents, perhaps she could explain to them why this is something that's important for the child. So she came to ask me the question, what's the halacha? Is she obligated to do something about this, or can she just say, it's not my issue, it's not my obligation? So I responded as follows. I said that the question that you're asking me is in fact 2 days in Tosus. I didn't go through all the lumbus back and forth the rise from Tosus. I said in fact it's a question. It's a very, very real question what you're asking. However, the question would have only been relevant if you wouldn't have brought it to my attention. Once you brought it to my attention, I am obligated now. It is now my issue, and I have a responsibility to take care of it according to all opinions, because I'm part of the Bezit. I'm part of the Bezit. I'm for sure Chayav. So I said to her, I'm asking you a personal favor. I said, can you act as my shaliach? Can you, because I don't know these people from a hole in the wall. I said, can you do something, possibly whatever in the seating you can do, in order to try to perhaps impress upon this family the importance of the mitzvah of bris milah? I don't know what the end of the story was, I have to be honest, but I think that was that was what the halacha would be, that whether or not the woman herself has an obligation is somewhat questionable, but once it comes to the attention to other members of the Jewish community, the male members of the Jewish community, then for sure we have everything we have to take every possible step to ensure that this child will receive a bris milah. I had a shaila recently, just a couple of weeks ago, I received a shaila from another Rav who came to his attention that there was already an older person in the community, also originally come from Russia, and came to his attention that the person had never received a bris milah, and the person was interested in listening. He was willing to negotiate, he was willing to listen about bris milah. So the question was, what do we do about it? So this Rav called me, so I said, okay, we'll get into contact. Usually when you're dealing with an older person, so it's not so simple, it doesn't go with the Bagels and Lock story. You have to, usually requires a urologist and possibly a hospitalization, whatever the case may be. So we made a couple of phone calls to some of the people who may be able to help from a medical point of view to assist along with this. It turns out that one of the doctors, one of the more I'm close with, happened to have been out of town. He said, he'll be back in a couple of days, he'll be happy to take care of it in a couple of days. So I thought to myself, a couple of days? No. I said, I can't do that. I said, the halacha tells us that a person himself, always over the age of bar mitzvah, the man was in his 40s, over the age of bar mitzvah, the person is potentially chayef kares, according to some, of every second that he's not having a bris milah, every second counts. Not every day, not every week, it's not time for vacation. So I said, we have to find another doctor. I said, Baruch Hashem, I had another doctor in my arsenal who was also fully qualified, so we had to find the other doctor. So this doctor told me his story, this, he's got to get clearance from his partner, give the operator. So I said, okay, forget about you, we got a third doctor. I said, the bottom line, I have three different doctors working here, and I said to this Rav, I said, Kol HaKaidim Zocha. I said, all three doctors are equally capable. I said, whoever's going to come through first is going to get this person bris milah first. This is not time to play games. It's not, you know, whether the bris starts at 9:55, 9:56 today, that doesn't make a difference. But you have a person who's over the age of bar mitzvah, that mamish, every second is considered to be a bitl mitzvah shah v'nisakores. So I said, we have to act in the quickest possible way. So we had everybody all signed up, we had the whole team all ready, and then one small technical problem. The person himself got second and got cold feet. So we're still waiting. We're still waiting that he'll turn around and he'll be willing to get his bris milah. But again, this is something, an obligation, that if it ever comes to our attention that there really is someone, particularly over the age of bar mitzvah, who does not have a bris milah, if we have any input and any say whatsoever to do it in an appropriate manner, so this is something that's not just a nice thing to do. This is the chiyuv gama min haTorah. This is the chiyuv. This is the Torah fulfillment of the psukim b'Parshas Lech Lecha, making sure that everybody, every Jewish male, receives a bris milah. So up until now we've been focusing really on the three different levels that appear in the Gemara itself: the father, the beis din, the individual, the role of the mother is either different from the father or perhaps connected to the beis din. There is one other individual who may play a role as well. I say the may, it's a question whether he plays his role, and that's the question of the role of a grandfather. Does a grandfather have any additional role in the mitzvah of bris milah above and beyond any other member of Klal Yisrael? Is there a unique relationship? I mean, of course, there's a unique relationship between a grandfather and grandson, that is true, but does it play out in terms of Hilchos Milah in a halachic sense? So the Rambam in the ninth of the Marmakomos, in Hilchos Tamat Torah, in Parag Avalach Adays, the Rambam is not talking about Bris Milah, the Rambam is talking about the mitzvah of teaching Torah. The Rambam quotes the Gemara Maseches Kedushim, which is in fact a machlokas in the Gemara, but the Rambam sides with the following view: Kishem Shechayev Odom Lalamed Es Beno, Kachu Chayev Lalamed Es Ben Beno. Just as a father is obligated to teach his his son Torah, so too a grandfather is obligated to teach a grandson Torah. As the Torah says explicitly in Parshas Veschanan, it's similar to the mitzvah of Vishinamta Levanecha. Then the Rambam goes on to say, how is that different from a regular mitzvah of teaching anyone Torah? Anyone who's able to teach Torah is supposed to teach anybody Torah. So what's unique about the grandfather? The Rambam explains, again, we're not learning the sugya of the Talmud Torah right now, but one thing we have to extract is that there is a real obligation, not just a nice thing, but a real obligation of a grandfather to be Malame Torah to a Ben HaBen. The Shulchan Aruch discusses what are some of the consequences of that statement, that the ramifications of that statement that a grandfather has an actual obligation to teach Torah to a grandchild may translate into dollars and cents in terms of, just as a father has an obligation, even b'schar, if he can't do it himself, then he's required by the halacha to hire and send some Muhammad, to hire a school to enable the child to learn. So that obligation may rest on a grandfather as well. I know that the tuition committees in the schools are very fond of quoting that statement in the Shulchan Aruch about grandparents. So, well, whatever it is, it's not maybe another exciting topic with another time and place, but I'll call upon him, maybe more exciting than Brisk Mila, but whatever it is, the bottom line is that a grandfather does have such an obligation. But we're talking about Brisk Mila. What does that have to do with Talmud Torah? So Rabbi Kivager writes in a Teshuva a suggestion that just as we find that a grandfather has a unique relationship to the grandson vis-a-vis Talmud Torah, that may carry over to Bris Milah as well. Why should one think that there's a connection between the two? Well, we started off this year by saying that a father has a whole series of different obligations to the son, the chi of a Bris Milah, and Pidgin Amenav is the firstborn, and getting married, and teaching a trade, etc. And Bris Milah and Talmud Torah are two of those obligations. And we find that the grandfather is included in one, maybe we can extrapolate, maybe we can argue that there is some kind of a connection between Talmud Torah and Bris Milah. Maybe we have a right to extend the chiyuv of a father to a grandfather as well. My nafkamina lahalacha, is there any real nafkamina? So the original context of the tshuva that Rabbi Kivager was talking about was the question that we spoke about before the Rambam and the Ravid, if there's no father here, who, if anybody, should recite the bracha of l'hachniso? So normally the custom is that the tzaddik recites the bracha. In this particular case, Rabbi Kivager wrote that for whatever reason, the grandfather is not the tzaddik. Let's see, he had been a tzaddik in a previous prayer of the family. Whatever the reason was, the grandfather is not serving as the tzaddik right now. Rabbi Kivager writes, he thinks that the grandfather should recite the bracha of l'chniso, that he has kedima, he has precedence over the tzaddik, based on this understanding that there's some kind of a connection between the Talmud Torah and the Bris Milah, that a grandfather's unique role in terms of Talmud Torah, and that unique role carries over to Bris Milah as well, and it makes more sense for the grandfather to recite l'chniso rather than anybody else present. This idea that there may be some real link between Talmud Torah and Bris Milah may go back to one of the questions that we left a little hanging earlier on in the shiur. What is this bracha of l'chniso all about? Why are we making this bracha? So we saw the Rambam's approach, that's the Chovas Av. We saw Rabbeinu Tam's approach, that's the Berachas HaShevach. But there is a third possibility, what this bracha of l'chniso is all about. The Avud Raham suggests that the bracha of l'chniso is really covering a whole gamut of responsibilities that a father has. Because if you think about it, says Avud Raham, there are many obligations a father has to the son. The father brings his son to school, brings him to cheder the first day, so he doesn't recite a bracha. Asher kiddushan is also the lamdo Torah. Why not? When he teaches him Torah, tzivah l'anamosh, he should recite a bracha. Why doesn't he do that? Well, let's say down the line, he teaches him a trade. He doesn't make a bracha. L'lamdo umnas. He tosses him into the swimming pool, teaches him out. Hopefully, he doesn't toss him. He nicely puts him, teaches him how to swim. He doesn't make a bracha. L'lamdo l'schol pabricha. There's no such bracha. Kahena v'kahena, we don't find it. He walks into the chuppah, the father doesn't make a bracha. He makes other brachas, but he doesn't make a bracha. Asher kiddushanu l'hachnas says v'nilach l'chuppah. So what happened? Where did all the brachas go? What happened to all the brachas and all the other obligations? Suggest Avud Raham, the bracha l'achniso covers everything. Ala mila was for the mila. Achniso is from here on in. L'achniso b'vrisa shlam avinu. I'm making a bracha, I'm beginning to raise a Jewish child. What does it mean to raise a Jewish child? I give him a bris, to teach him Torah, to teach him a trade, teach him how to swim, teach him how to live a safe life, teach him how to get him married. This is all part of raising a Jewish child. L'achniso b'vrisa shlam avinu, encompassing everything. If that's the case, that the bracha l'chniso b'vrisa shlam avinu includes everything, then Rabbi Kivager makes a lot of sense. Then it would make sense that the grandfather has a very real role to play. The grandfather has a role to play in the teaching of the Torah, so for sure he has a role to play in the bris, and he is the most appropriate person there. If the father's not present, he is the next in line to recite the bracha of l'chniso. I was at a bris once where the mole turns around to the father after the bris was over, and the mole said to the father, "Okay, you're finished, you're done, you're off the hook until the bar mitzvah." So I was asked to speak at that bris. It wasn't Rabbi Cassidy, it was not the mole at the time. So I was asked to speak. So I said, you know, I very rarely like to disagree with somebody, especially with the mole, especially at a bris. He was a nice fellow, the mole, the cheering person. I don't think he was insulted. I said, "But I have to disagree with you." He said, "What's the disagree?" He said, "You said that the Baal Simcha is off the hook until the Bar Mitzvah." He said, "No, it's not true. The Avud Ram says opposite. He says that Lachnisa V'Bisav Shavita means you have to be mechanech your child." I said, "You have to teach your child starting now." I said, "Chinuch begins early, early, early. Everything you teach your child, everything, you're a role model for your child, even before formal education, everything the child hears and sees, picks up the sounds in the house, that's all part of chinuch." I said, "The mitzvah of Lachniso encompasses everything." I said, "Your job is not, you can't sit back and relax for 13 years minus a week." I said, "You got to go to work right now." I said, "For the second the bris is over, you have to begin now formally Lachniso, Bevriso Shalom Avino, Malam Do Torah, and all the different manifestations of that." So the mitzvah of bris milah is not an end in and of itself. The mitzvah of bris milah is really a beginning. The mitzvah of bris milah is the beginning of Lachnisa V'Visha Shalom Avino. It's the obligation, first and foremost, we set on the father. We have the lumbuses, a shliach, not a shliach. Bottom line is, it's the father's first and foremost obligation. The mother has a certain degree of obligation, perhaps, but there is bezin, but there is klaus, so it's a different obligation. If, for whatever reason, the mitzvah of bris milah is not taken care of properly, the grandfather becomes obligated. If even that doesn't take place, then the child himself, when he turns by mitzvah, becomes obligated. So hopefully we should be zocha to celebrate many, many brisim together, many, many simchas together, and hopefully to be zocha l'hachnisis, all of our children, in the full sense, the truest sense of the word, b'vris ha'shalom
l'vino. Amen. Yashkayach. So as not to delay, the reason my team in bris milah will take place downstairs in 6 minutes.
There is a machlokus in Rishonim whether a woman is acceptable to be a bowler or not. Under normal circumstances, we would obviously not have women do it. But there's absolutely no choice. It would have to be a religious, Jewish religious woman.
Absolutely, yes. But
it's Jewish, it's better to have it. Again, if you're really afraid that this is not going to take place for a long time, it's probably better to have the woman do it. But it would have to be a from Jewish.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Now, how do you explain that strange story with Moshe and
Zipporah? Yes, the Gemara talks about it. The Gemara talks about it. The Gemara doesn't talk so much about who was obligated. The Gemara is talking about, can a woman even share it to do it? So the Gemara has a whole discussion about that.
And what does that suggest, that she has some sort of obligation?
Well, she was doing it not as so much as obligation. She was doing it because she realized that her husband, Moshe, had not taken care of his obligation. So she was doing it more to help him than as a personal obligation.
This is what happened.
That's the shame.